revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Naomi.
Show that we have just begun. This is, I think, our fourth show. But we are so happy that you are with us because you are the ones that make these shows possible. And we have with us today one of the masters from Europe, and his name is Rogier Chardet. And I have asked Rogier if he will please be kind enough to compile a series of interesting questions. I'm not sure what he has done, but I know it's going to be exciting. Rogier, welcome with us today. Appreciate that you've come onto the show.
You're welcome.
And Rogier, please start in with the correct order of questions that you want us to tackle, and I'd be delighted to answer them.
Okay, well, I have to say there's not really a lot of sort of, I mean, there. These questions pertain to various topics, so might not seem very like there's a logic to it, but at any rate, the first two are about diets and the things we eat or drink. And we have one reader who asks about this raw food diet she's on, and that she's been on it for quite a while, yet she's not particularly feeling any better, whereas she thought that she should be feeling better by now. What can you say about that?
Well, let's tackle it from this angle. As one goes through the various stages of your evolution, there does come a time where you basically can eat anything you want. Many of the ascended masters from India have proven this by just eating anything at all to show people that it will not harm their bodies. Many of the ascended masters that gather around when we have our classes, the physical ones that are present, have found the same thing. They have found that hunger just diminishes, going to the bathroom diminishes along with it, and at the end of the day they eat what they wish because it is delightful. Now, there is another thing that we need to look at in regarding nutrition and health. Nutrition and healthy, non-toxic bodies go hand in hand with spirituality, but perhaps in a slightly different way than people usually think. The first part they've already got. And the first part is that the toxins in the liver and the kidneys and the various organs actually contribute to the holding on of old patterns, old illusions. So that, in fact, as they become cleaner in body, their minds clear up, perception is more clear, and consciousness raises. So you can tackle it by having a pure and clear body, detoxing your organs to make you feel better. That's fine, and it will assist with releasing the old in your life because it brings in new light. But the opposite is true as well. And I'll give you an example. In 2004, in October, I got the instruction from the ascended masters of our planet that I needed to put out there a statement that as of a specific day in October 2004, that my body would detox all viruses, all bacteria, hostile, and all fungus, parasites, and toxins would release. The same happened a few months later to one of my students who was one of the first that went into her ascended mastery. Well, for 3 months, toxins poured out of my body as I ate exactly what I wanted, no change in diet, but I had to increase my water intake. It poured out, and toxins was pouring through my skin. It smelled like old anesthetics of dentist's office and things like that was coming through the skin, 3 months of it. In 3 months after that date, I went into the first level of my ascended master. And the lady that I'm referring to had a total raw food diet. She grew her own food in her little garden, ate it raw. We ended up at the same level where everything had been detoxed. She, too, was amazed. Everything was pouring through her skin. And she went into her ascended mastery a little step behind me, so to speak. So as you go into the higher realms, either through love, praise, and gratitude, and into higher stages of consciousness, the body automatically must detoxify. Because if you put new light in, the organs can't hold the toxins. So that's the flip side of the story of how purity of body and consciousness relates. One way or the other, it's going to end up pure. So that's number one. But the second thing of it is, there are two other reasons why that person that communicated either to our email list or to you directly, I'm not sure, but why they would not be feeling better per se when they're eating a raw food diet. The point is that raw food diets only work for specific things. They help to rapidly detoxify because of the chlorophyll that you're entering, that you're putting in your body. At the same time, if she was feeling ill in the beginning because of something that is quite prevalent among particularly light workers, and that is the inability to digest density, what it manifests as is some sort of a bacterial disease, often it's staph or strep in the transverse colon, right below the sort of diaphragm area, because there are no nerve endings there. And lingering infections from sore throats, for instance, can linger there for 12, 13, 15 years without our knowing, making the bowel very raw inside. Raw food diet is very rough on healing a raw intestine. In that instance, if you were to eat 80% cooked, 20% raw, it's at least easier and helps it to heal. And then I also usually recommend that people try taking lily of the desert aloe vera gel about a half a cup, sort of a half an hour before meals, or at least in the morning and at least at night, because it has a coating capability of healing the bowel. But it could be due to that. And alternatively, it could be due to parasites that are not necessarily in the GI tract. That would, over the long term, help because it makes the body more alkaline and parasites like acidic environments. So there are multiple reasons why she wouldn't feel well.
Okay, but when I came across the question, which was an email question, incidentally, I had to think of this remark you had recently made about, you know, what might be wrong about approaching food in a way which is like, what is the most that I can get from it? And similarly, the question of, you know, how does health relate to the food that we eat?
Oh, very, very good point. We should perhaps throw that one in as well into the mix. And so when we approach anything with what is the most I can get out of it, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a sexual encounter, or whether it is our food, or whether it is a job environment, it is self-centered. And when we are self-centered, it depletes not only ourselves, but our environment. Food does not yield its proper nutrition at that point. Native Americans a long time ago became aware of that. So when they would harvest, for instance, sage, they would give the plant water back or tobacco. They would only take one little branch and not pull the plant out by its root, but one branch from each plant. But they took it with gratitude. And they gave something back. So if we approach food with that way of what is the most I can get out of it, again, it does not properly yield its nutrition. If, on the other hand, we enjoy it, we appreciate it, we are grateful for it, and whatever is in front of us is for us holy and sacred, it acknowledges whatever nutrition that food has, and then it yields the most. The answer is to approach life with what is the most I can give, instead of what is the most I can get for the least I can give. That is one of the biggest downfall of relationships as well.
Right. And what would you say about the health determines is determined by food question?
When people are not in mastery of the atomic elements of their own body, in other words, when they have not reached that middle phase, and we discuss the evolutionary stages of man in the book called The Ring of Truth, as well as in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, in which we illustrate how the fields around the body transfigure what are the challenges of each stage, what are the symptoms of which stage of your evolutionary awareness you're in. Well, when you get to the middle phase of your final stage, which is ascended mastery, the middle phase is the immortality of the body stage. And when you are there, and the body is brought into immortality, at that point, it really shouldn't determine it. And I say shouldn't because if you have the belief system that it would, then it will still do it. Our belief systems determine a lot. But
right.
If you are not yet in mastery of the atomic elements of your own body, then food will follow the general belief system of the planet, because you're still hooked to the grid of the death, illness, illusion that people cling to.
Right, okay. And then there's this second question, which is from a different reader, but nevertheless concerns the issue of diet. And she writes that, well, she's in this, I think I better not name the channel being, but in what professes itself to be a modern school of enlightenment, and she describes how there they do these, you know, collectively and do these wine ceremonies, where the idea is that the wine, you know, opens the channels and really makes us receptive to all this sort of cosmic information. But she really wonders if this is sort of a useful ritual, or that it is actually the opposite of that.
Substances that tamper with clarity usually actually promise clarity, but they don't deliver. Let's take a look at people that are in identity with the mind, with the ego, with the emotions. They try and get ahead, but they follow teachers that themselves are there. And so what it does is it just leads them around and around in a fishbowl. With substances that alter that, that fishbowl's walls, it's nevertheless a fishbowl. It just pushes it out slightly bigger. You know, you have the peyote ceremonies, and you have the, you know, that supposedly is very sacred. It would have to take tremendous expertise to shift the assemblage point, which is that point on the outer edge of the bodies of man, which forms sort of a luminous egg around the body. We've got them described in multiple of our books. The assemblage point is a tennis ball size ball of light. For people in identity consciousness, it is an arm's length behind the heart. Well, those substances alter it. In the case of drugs, they move it sideways. In the case of alcohol, it actually moves it downward, so it actually lowers consciousness. In the case of those the mind-altering drugs, moving sideways is not responsive to consciousness. For instance, if we take a look at the assemblage point position, in order to move into God consciousness, where you've actually now finally gotten out of your fishbowl in which you just keep going round and round. You have to move it up. For some people, depending on how low their consciousness is, it could be 5 inches up. And then it has to go left, depending on how much right brain reliance there is on the person, how much they're into their feeling, non-cognitive information. It would move to the left between 2 to about 7 inches. Well, maybe 7 is a bit far, but I've seen them having to move to about 6 inches. So that is a raise in consciousness. To just simply move left, which is right brain awareness, and then move back again, what has that really achieved? It's just another same level that you're at. You've just gone deeper into right brain, and then you return back again to left brain, but now it's a little more unpleasant to live in the world of paying bills and so on. And so people tend to rely to move into this place where they kind of leave it behind. But it isn't really left behind. It does not deliver. Alcohol, on the other hand, actually is depressive, and so it moves it downward. Well, the further down that assemblage point is, the lower your consciousness is.
Yes. All right. Now, earlier you spoke of transfiguration, and that reminds me of a question which actually comes later on, but we'll just shift it forward a bit. A reader asks about sort of your what would define a god or a goddess, and she's well aware that you refer to gods and goddesses in the flesh, but she finds it somewhat confusing because that's not what she would normally, she has different associations with these words. So could you elaborate on that?
Yes. The physical body, because of man relying primarily on their 5 senses versus their multiple internal space senses in the past. Because of that, the body can hide incredible things. We can have the darkest of the dark walking among us and the lightest of the light walking among us and not really know the difference unless you spend some time with them. But if you just see them in the street, you wouldn't know the difference. So the point is that to the eyes, someone that has entered the God kingdom and has exited the human kingdom could appear the same. To be in their presence for long, you will start to feel changes happen because these are the changes by grace that comes from somebody that has actually exited the human kingdom into the higher kingdoms. Now, what the definition is of somebody that has exited the human kingdom is that they live in a sphere of zero-point energy. And in a human, the zero-point energy is a very small opening behind the belly button in the life force center. But the point is that for a god, this explodes, and they have this massive field around their body that is zero-point energy. What that does is it closes the distance between cause and effect. It enables multiple miracles to take place, but even if somebody is a god being in the flesh, they would not necessarily do those miracles, or they would take some pains to hide it. Because if it is not their mission to do these miracles for people, then the miracles will not be done that way. There is no ego at that point. There is no need for self-acclaim. And there is no need to create a situation that is normally the case with miracles. I have written in my book, Secrets of the Hidden Realms, what happens when miracles are done in front of students. They might be in awe the moment it's done, but afterwards the chances of their turning on you and rejecting you completely is a lot more enhanced because the left brain will attack anything to stay in control. And if there are things that it cannot explain, it will tell you that you've done a magic trick, that you fooled their eyes, that you put them in hypnotism, or that they simply didn't see it. Most people say that they seek new truth, but what they're seeking is truth of that is confirming their already held belief systems. And in this way, the prison bars of their belief systems get thicker and thicker, and they usually either ridicule, ignore, reject, you know, or simply just walk away from anything that does not conform to those held belief systems. So that to do that is not beneficial.
No. And I take it that a lot of, well, I mean, people in general, when they think of a god or a goddess, really think of the sort of old-fashioned, ancient pantheons, really, and have very much a sort of like a more kindergarten approach to the idea. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes, it has. There has been a big struggle in the cosmos over the minds of man. The reason is that the Earth became the pivot point for the cosmic ascension that started in February of 2005. And so when that began, it was seen by those who would be pulled into oblivion because of their non-life-enhancing mode of life, that if they could keep man down, they could delay their own demise. Multiple races have disappeared off the map of the cosmos because they were non-life enhancing and would not change with every opportunity that the Infinite Mother gave them to change. And the Infinite Mother is the one being that expresses as the many, and the Father is her first creation. She's the one that births life. It's always the feminine that births life. But so it was to those gods who were non-life enhancing, because not all of them were. It was to their advantage to keep man in that infantile state. But the other thing, too, is that up until August of 2005, we have only had 9 of our ascended masters actually make that leap over that huge chasm that exists between kingdoms into the next level, where there were only 9 earthly gods. And they were Buddha, Christ, Krishna, Sanat Kumara, the Mother Mary, Elizabeth, who is the mother of John the Baptist, and 2 Taoist immortal masters. At that point, they were the only ones there present. And so it was not until August of 2005 that Mother gave the instruction, prepare the ascended masters in embodiment and prepare those gods in embodiment, because they are vitally necessary if the Earth is going to be the prototype or the archetype that represents all kingdoms. That's one of the reasons it has the most diversity of any planet. And this has been told multiple times to me by various star beings, because it's representative of everything in order to be that pivot point for everything. So we had to have them in embodiment.
All right. let's see. Well, there's a question here which I noted down, which really came from overhearing one of the conversations between the masters a few days ago, masters in your class, and the essence of it was really that this sort of the opinion that was being expressed by one of them, or the viewpoint, was that you know, sexuality and the sacred are really two different things, and if you have, for example, a room which is sacred, then it really should be mutually exclusive with sexuality. And I thought that was a sort of an interesting sort of question, and was curious to find how you might comment on that one.
There is a great need for sexuality in the spiritual, because when you get to the top of the Ascended Masteries. Let's take a look at those Ascended Masters. Why did only nine make it? Only nine made it through because of the fact that the Kundalini, which is the result of either deep creativity or sexuality that can push that Kundalini up. The Kundalini is, in fact, the key to getting across that chasm. And here's how it is. As one goes from stage to stage to stage to stage between the evolutionary stages of man, the emotions and perceptions interact because emotion yields perception, and increased perception will change the way emotions are. But if you think of emotions as the sides of the pyramid and the base of the pyramid as perception, there are times during a stage that the base is very wide and the sides are very flat of the pyramid. Well, that's because the emotions are almost not there. You're in very expanded awareness. Then you will go through into another stage and you will have very heightened emotions and a very small base, which means that the emotions are just, you know, you have to have a handle on it because they're out of control, almost in terms of that you feel so deeply. You cry and cry and cry over the slightest thing. Your love pours out. You just want to give all your money to the poor or whatever. And perception doesn't always match that level of emotion. Well, the end of humanity's stages, the apex of it, is that third stage of ascended mastery in which most of our ascended masters decided that they would vibrate out of the physical with their bodies and be non-physical masters. Now, the point is that sexuality was virtually non-existent there until the Infinite Mother actually fixed that. And because of that, they had virtually no emotions. They had no emotions, they had no sexuality. Their expanded vision was like the base of a pyramid that was so big that the sides were just about flat. How does one then generate the emotion, because it is emotion that opens the door into the God kingdom? Well, you do it with heightened sexuality. The nine that made it across, and one of them was Kuan Yin, which I forgot to mention, the nine that made it across up until August of 2005 had utilized somehow that secret that the Kundalini can yet again awaken the emotions. It needs to push up the sides of the pyramid. Only then can you cross. So from that point alone, it is vitally important. The other thing, too, is that Mother herself has made absolutely sure that sexuality is alive and well, shall we say, in every one of the kingdoms. The Ascended Masters were so stagnant without it that the only place as stagnant was the then underworld that we had, which now we don't have any underworld left because we've been ascending. But then we had a partial underworld, and the only place as stagnant was the underworld, which had overpolarized into the dark, and the Ascended Masters had overpolarized into the light, which is the known. It's by living and incorporating the unknown into the known that growth takes place. So growth had completely stopped. Now there is sexuality amongst the Ascended Masters, both in physical form and there, and that makes a huge difference in the fact that now the Ascended Masters have renewed energy and growth.
So it would be safe to say that sexuality does not belong to the realm of the profane then, you know, versus the sacred.
Well, let's define which portions of sexuality belongs to the profane. Sexuality, when it asks the wrong question of taking without giving back, for example, pornography is like that. takes, but it doesn't give back. It asks the question, what is the most I can get from this? Instead of, what is the most I can give? Sexuality, again, that is practiced by many spiritual seekers, that says that it needs to practice tantra or something, approaches it just like that person trying to get the most nutrition from their food. And
yes.
Again, sexuality does not fulfill its purpose. But you're here with, I think what we should do is take a break for commercials. And when we come back, we will go into how do you approach sexuality. Stay with us, and we hope our listeners will be right back with us.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, a state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almeen's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almeen's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
To the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. We were speaking about sexuality and sensuality, and we were promised to talk about after the break exactly how it would be to have sexuality that would enhance the consciousness of those that participate. Every one of us is a being as vast as the cosmos, having a human experience. We are a consciousness superimposed over all that is. When we acknowledge that in the person during a sexual interaction, during our partner, when we enter them and become one with their unique perspective that is superimposed over all that is, we are tremendously enriched. Now we have approached them from their largest perspective, and we have helped them achieve that larger perspective. When we then go into the form and appreciate and truly savor every portion of that person, the way that you would take time to eat a meal that has been prepared with so much love and pride and an offering of giving to the one who is eating it, you wouldn't just gobble it down. You would appreciate every bite. To truly appreciate that person's form through the five senses, but appreciate their greater perspective through your inner senses, allows both of you to grow. And we recently discussed the fact that fluids transmitted during sexuality, whether birth control is used or not, are actually telepathic communicators. So if there is a person that is greatly disturbed and you are just simply using this person as a sexual release, this for 6 hours after the sexual intercourse has occurred, that person will be transmitting to you their distortion, if that's what they have, or their enlightenment. So it will either enhance you or it will not. So, you know, sexuality as a means of expressing the deep love you feel for someone is a very good guideline. So does that answer the question?
I think that answers the question.
Okay.
All right. The next question is actually sort of a question of my own, in the sense that it concerns a sort of a conversation I was having with one of the masters in the Order of the Dove, and you know, the conversation may be a little bit uneasy, but I wasn't sure why, and the essence of it really was that she was talking, you know, I think this was information she may have gotten from like channeling from some sort of ascended master, or I'm not sure who, but anyway, it concerned this idea of twin flames and well, soulmates, but specifically this idea of twin flames I wanted to ask about, since it's quite a sort of hot topic in the new age. And personally, I felt that her waiting for this twin flame was actually sort of, may actually have been obstructing her in a way as well, but I wasn't really sure about that, so I thought you could maybe shed some light on that one.
Let's take what some may regard as the definition of a twin flame, where there is one being that splits into two. That is very, very, very seldom done cosmically. People seem to think of it as the norm, that everybody has a twin flame. That is very seldom done. And during the ascension, many beings that were across the cosmos, living multiple lives, had their lives drawn into this, their earthly life. In other words, those soul pieces came in. And the reason was that this was the hot spot. This is the place where whatever experience and insights they had gained, it could do the most good, because the earth became that way shower that led the ascension into higher realms, pulling the entire cosmos behind it. I mean, when that began, we had 80 UFOs above my house, because they'd come to try and understand, because Mother had given the assignment to myself and other masters that were gathered to open the membrane that the earth could move through. And they came to understand, and they said, you know, you're pulling us over the edge of space. And then the ascended masters actually explained that to them, that the earth had become the way shower, and this was the way it was meant to be. But my brothers and sisters out there might still think that every single person has a twin flame. That is not the case. The other thing that should be remembered is there are millions and millions of people in the inner earth. And their coming forth is prophesied in many religions. In fact, Mormonism prophesies about it. Their modern-day prophets had mentioned it. It has been multiple times told to me by the Mother Goddess that this is to take place, that they represent the etheric realms of the earth, that we represent the physical, and that at some point this has to merge. And so that there will be some time when they will come out of the inner earth and intermingle with us. Many people have wonderfully compatible partners, and that's not very far distant. And they're in the inner earth. Their life is more innocent, it is more pastoral, they have refrained, even though they are very advanced spiritually, from mechanizing their world to the extent that ours has been. So there are many, many partners there. The other thing, too, is that let's say that you make a contract eons ago when you started to go into the descension cycles of the fall with somebody that you are then partners with. They may have made wrong choices along the way. They may no longer even be here. Because beings that could not handle the higher levels of the ascension because they continually went back to old patterns have ceased to exist in a purification process that is not dissimilar from our body purifying as we're going into higher realms. So those people might not even be around. There might be far more compatible people around us, but we're looking for this memory of somebody that no longer exists. Thirdly, there is another thing to consider. The Mother Goddess has created new groups of people and beings and lords and angels and gods. Some of them are coming into human form. And what about the brand new creations that are created at a much higher level when the one we thought we were going to be with is in a lower level? We would prefer that? You see, I mean, it's just not that cut and dried. So I understand that you felt uneasy with that.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I was wondering. I mean, we really should sort of then scrutinize this notion of this sort of this partner we're cosmically, you know, destined to be with, because that seems to be quite prevalent, I would say.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, and the point too is we might find him and he may not remember us and choose someone else. And then people would think, oh my gosh, my life is devastated by this choice of the other person. It is complete foolishness to put our happiness at the mercy of another. My brothers and sisters out there should really understand that, you know, if there's a planet revolving around the sun, and that sun dies, that planet has the right to go to another sun. That is perhaps even more luminous.
Yeah. All right. And actually, a related point to this this conversation did make me think about this sort of, this sort of lots of information that seems to sort of, you know, abound about, you know, past lives, and, you know, especially in the context of all these beings like ascended masters being channeled. I mean, what would you reckon to such practices, basically, like, you know, the validity or the usefulness of information in general?
You mean from channelings or from past lives?
Well, both, really, often, especially the sort of, I mean, I've come across a lot of psychics who will provide all this sort of information concerning past lives, and they've often said different things as well, and I get the impression that within the sort of community of channeling, that the same kind of, you know, shaky information is often professed. So I was wondering how to relate to it.
Let's go there then. It is in the flesh where all new information is gained. Perhaps I should give this as an example. Around the cosmos, I have been speaking on a day-by-day basis, basically sometimes for 6 hours at a time, with the Mother Goddess, multiple beings out there. That's different than channeling. And you know, the teachings of the Taoist immortal masters, some of their old records indicate that before they became ascended beings, or even after they became ascended beings, some certain things happened, which is exactly what the masters that are losing their ego identification and rapidly moving into these advanced stages, in those weeks that we spend together, we loosely call them classes, but they have got undergone the same thing, but these are in our ancient records. The Taoists say that they suddenly start to speak other languages. You yourself, as you went into these advanced stages, spoke some of the other languages. You speak the language of the father. I speak several of the mother's languages. I speak several of the kingdom's languages. The masters in my classes are all starting to either write or speak languages with very few exceptions. This is because they're in the advanced stages. It's one of the signs. The other sign, they say, is that women find that the vagina returns to like puberty dimensions. It's as though they're in puberty again. I've had women that have gone into their ascended mastery in my classes, and one day they could actually, and this is very sort of personal discussion, but they could get a tampon in, and the next day they couldn't. They were struggling with it. It immediately goes back to those dimensions, and it actually continually does. So that's a second thing that the Taoists wrote about in their female masters. The third thing that they write about, and this is the point I'm trying to make, is that as they go into the higher levels, they converse with gods and masters and so on like equals. And so, you know, in the higher stages, the idea of channeling is a very strange notion, because you discuss things with other beings, and they're sometimes right and they're sometimes not. For us to take any kind of a channel as the gospel truth is the height of absurdity. They have opinions just like we do. They're wrong at times, just like we may be. And so to include them in your friends and circle and discuss, that's a different matter. But to show you how important information is that is gathered in the physical, and if you want to, we can talk later about how it's gathered, I was in conversation for the first time that I could remember. You know, I don't know eons ago if I was, but as far as I can remember, I've never been in conversation before with one of the oceans of consciousness, which are vast oceans of the mother's consciousness lying around the cosmos. I've only been speaking to the formed goddess and her aspects that she uses to keep open spaces within the cosmos until May of 2007. For the first time, I spoke to oceans of consciousness, and at times I spoke to multiples of them. Well, one of them gave me a blatantly wrong answer. I said, but Mother, I didn't want to contradict the Divine Mother. I said, Mother, I just don't understand. This answer cannot possibly be right. And she gave me some justification for the answer. I pointed out again why it couldn't possibly be right. And there was a silence. And she says, you're right. She said, the highest truth can always be found where the known meets the unknown, which is in the physicality. See how dangerous it is when we think that higher realms know more than we do. Because all they know is what is already known. We are the ones that access that which is not already known. So all new truth is accessed through humanity is the densest of beings right now. So we are the ones that actually access all new information. And how do we do that? By observing the signs in our environment. That tells us, and we have given what's over a million years of Toltec oral traditions. As a Toltec Nahual, I have added some information to it, but it is from my own experience, not just wishful thinking or regurgitated information. It is eons of study by Toltec Nahuals as to what dream symbols mean. We have given this in Secrets of the Hidden Realms as well as the Ring of Truth in the section entitled The Realms of the Dreams. Now, in our daily life, the signs there tell us the new information. The dreams tell us what we've missed. So they go hand in hand to reveal to us new information that we should be accessing. If we're overdue with something, the dream's going to tell us you didn't catch this. Or caught it, but this is your deeper understanding about it. So, but our environment speaks to us if we're literate to interpret it.
And interpreting it would be, I mean, how do you, would you know if a symbol is relevant to be interpreted in your sort of environment? Like, I mean, is it because it's sort of, there's something significant or out of the ordinary about it in that time?
Yes, exactly, Rogier. For example, a crow. A crow stands for the path of power. The path of power is flying all over the sky. I mean, there are crows everywhere. It doesn't mean that they're speaking to you. For example, when I wanted to know whether I should have these week-long journeys with inviting people to share the deep mystical experiences of my life, which would alter them irrevocably and, you know, assist me as well, I went to the grocery store and there was a crow eating an apple in my parking space, but he wouldn't move. So I inched it forward. I finally had to park over the crow. He wouldn't let his apple go and he couldn't pick it up. It was too heavy. Well, that's unusual. So, you know, I carefully drove over the crow and he's under my car still eating his apple. Now, what it was telling is the pot of food in these symbols means spiritual nourishment. So the path of power was to give spiritual nourishment, namely to teach. So that was my answer. So, you know, it stood out on the out of the norm. So you're quite correct. And sometimes it's subtle. It just stands out on the horizon in that you remember it when it isn't very, very noteworthy.
All right. Let's see.
Oh, you know what? Before you do the next one, could we have a quick commercial break? I am a little negligent about noticing the time on that. Folks, please stay with us. We're so happy that you're joining us today, and we will be right back after this.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any of the books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Hal Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Hal Mean. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back. We are delighted that you're joining us for our show today, and I am Hal Mean. We are talking about discovering the secrets of the hidden realms, the world of spiritual growth. We have with us Rogier, a master from Holland, who is at this time asking me our last question for the day. And Rogier, thank you for helping us today, and please, what would be our next question?
Well, what would be quite a short one I could find comes from a reader who, well, actually, no, she had only heard two of your CDs, I think the one about forgiveness and the one on silence, and then she read one of your books and was actually quite shocked by the sort of, what she calls the sort of far out nature of the information, and she was suggesting that, you know, if you just tone down a bit, you could really spread your, you know, reach many more people, and she was wondering why it had to be so extraordinary and unorthodox what you were writing.
All right. I live at the cutting edge of mysticism. What people call the hidden realms is for me as real as the realms that they dwell in. The relationships on what people would call the other side of what to them is a veil go deep and strong. I have very deep relationships with beings in the other realms. For instance, our planetary lord, Horlet, who is the god of our planet. He's at the core of the planet. Very, very deep relationship with him that spans eons of time. My life has deep secrets and mysteries in it. And it takes a great deal of courage to open one's life up to the scrutiny of others. But the only reason that that is done in my case is because Mother has given the very, very distinct instruction to me to get the planetary masters ready. So whereas other teachers gather more and more students, I am preparing and assisting in helping more and more masters be born, if you will. At that cutting edge, where maybe an average of 6 hours a day is spent working with that which lies beyond physical appearances, I cannot be expected to prostitute this sacred privilege and deep opportunity for the sake of being popular, for the sake of pleasing the masses. I don't teach the bottom of the pyramid, and I'm very grateful there are teachers that do. I teach the very capstone. And those masters are masters because they allowed their old paradigms to be completely broken, shattered, or stretched beyond where the ego mind can control their life any longer. If one wants to be in the sluggish waters of the marsh, I am not that teacher. But if one is brave enough to be in the center white water, where the water is always fresh and new, today's truth is not the same for me as yesterday's truth. But students seek truth. Masters create truth spontaneously in the minute. So, my brothers and sisters, it is come to a close, and I'm grateful, Rogier, that you have phrased that, because I haven't previously spoken about it in public. And a question like that from our sister, I'm grateful that she asked it. And at the same time, your questions are always welcome. We welcome your emails. And if you are on our email list, you will regularly receive emails of question and answers as we gather that which you wish to know, and I answer them to the best of my ability. We try and answer every single question that comes our way, either individually if we can, or collectively on shows like this or to our general email list. We also have a question answer free magazine on our website, which is www.spiritualjourneys.com. It takes courage, my brothers and sisters, to allow the old bars of our belief systems to fall away. It is a great privilege to speak to those that have that courage. Thank you very much for joining us this day, and we will speak to you next time.
We hope you enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mead. Please join us again next week.